And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Thursday afternoon. Welcome into the Closers. News Talk 1400 KFRU, 1240 KLIK down in Jefferson City. It's a nice day outside, as long as you're dodging, dancing and dodging. A couple pop-up showers floating around out there. But it's still a nice day out, and there is beautiful weather on the horizon. Jay Sparks sitting in, George Young off on assignment. I heard he was needed for a very secret code-breaking operation north of the Arctic Circle. I hope he bundled up. Definitely not what you're wearing around here in Missouri this time of year. He had to break out the Arctic Tupperware out of the basement in order to go on this special assignment. So, George Young, International Man of Mystery, on assignment. So, sitting in with me today, we've talked to him before. A lot of diamond sports knowledge here. We have him on the show sometimes. Friend of the show, Bo Bayman. Bo, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, Jay. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. I'm over here using elbows and thumbs and trying to keep this ship afloat. So it's my job when George is gone, and I do so to the best of my ability. I won't say well, just to the best of my ability.
I know that feeling.
What's going on with you, man? How's your summer been?
It's been good. It's been fast. I can't believe that school starts in the next couple weeks already, and we're already to August. But it's been good. There was a lot of youth baseball out at Diamond Council, out at Daniel Boone. Both my sons involved in that, so I've been going.
Yeah. Do you coach or ump or anything, or
I coach?
Okay.
And so I was the head coach of four teams this summer. Yeah. A competitive, an all-star team, a regular team, and then a coach pitch team as well.
Wow. That's a lot of youth baseball.
Yes, that's it takes a lot of our nights. We're out at the ballpark, that's for sure.
Okay, well, and that's not a bad thing. It's good to give back, and it's good to give kids a chance to go do that. The ones they're looking up to here in the mid-Missouri area, obviously Cardinals and Royals are your two teams that a lot of these kids are looking up to. The Cardinals came back off of you know, all-star break and put a kind of iffy together and not really sure where they were at, and then all of a sudden they swept the Rockies, who were sitting in the second wild card spot in the NL, and everybody kind of perked up a little bit and said, well, here they are, Cubs getting hot, Cardinals getting hot, this is the NL Central we normally are used to, let's do it, let's go. Then the first wild card team, the Diamondbacks, came in and they split, lose one, win one, lose one, win one. They split a four game set. Then the Brewers, they go up to Beerville up in Milwaukee, and they split the first two, down 2-1 right now, bottom of the eighth. Brewers up 2-1. Cardinals trying to put together a series win there before the Reds, before they head to the Great American Ballpark out there in Cincinnati. You know, what was your take on the Cardinals? I know trade deadline kind of came and went with a whimper, nothing really from that front office. Was it a stand pat year or a year to make a move either one way or the other?
Well, the funny thing about this year to me in the NL Central is the fact that the Cubs have so underachieved until after the break. The first half of the season, they were, you know, mediocre. They'd be here, they'd be there.
At best, yeah.
Yeah, and then they won, what, like 13 of 16 out of the break, and it's like, okay, the Cubs are the team that we thought they'd be, and I kind of expect them to keep going. Yeah. I mean, they made the big moves. They were the ones that got the big fishes in Quintana, especially when they did that right out of the All-Star break.
Right.
And so I think the Cubs kind of have taken over, and everybody else is like, well, we expected this. And so they stood pat. Mm-hmm. The Brewers stood pat. The Pirates kind of stood pat. And the Cardinals stood pat.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that has infused the Cardinals recently has been the return of Trevor Rosenthal is the closer, and he's really done a great job recently, and it takes O out of that role and puts him in the eighth inning, mm-hmm. where I think he's a little bit better. And so the back end of the bullpen seems to be a little more stable. And so if the offense can get five runs like they did last night, they should be able to win those games.
Yeah, and but when you look at that trade deadline, you look at O with, I believe, 1 year remaining after this year on his contract, Trevor Rosenthal, an expiring contract. If you don't think you're loading up, if you think the Cubbies are going to start running away with it, if you don't think you're in that discussion, those are two pieces that a contender could have used. And I mean, if you're talking about, you know, you never, as the GM, you can't talk about opening day 2018 in July of 2017, but you should be thinking about it.
Sure.
And I feel like they had some pieces that, that could have brought a return that would have made opening day 2018 a little better.
So what you're telling me is you thought they should have been sellers.
A little bit. I think there could have been some small, bad teams don't need good closers. The Royals showed that when you put together that kind of a bullpen, that's the third piece. You're pairing that bullpen with a rotation. You're pairing that bullpen with a lineup, because that bullpen, a bulletproof bullpen for a team that's going to struggle to score runs and is going to give up a lot of runs as from their starters is a waste. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of allocated resources if you're a GM. It's the third piece of that championship puzzle. And if you have a plethora and they're on expiring contracts and the division looks like it's getting a little out of reach when you come to the trade deadline, even without trading Lynn, even without making some of the other bigger splashier moves that really signal a give up on this year,
yeah,
you could have moved some things that would have made the like I said, the offseason and the opening day 2018 a little easier path for these Cardinals.
And it's interesting too, because you know, they come into play today only 4.5 out of first place.
Right.
I mean, it's not like they're 11 out. I mean, they're only 4.5 out. And I think that sort of complicated things. You heard about Lance Lynn maybe going.
Yep.
Steven Piscotty maybe going. But they didn't go. And I kind of feel like they felt like we are really in a holding pattern because we don't know what to do. We're within striking distance, and if we get hot, we can be there. And I think that if you have Lance Lynn and Martinez and Wainwright and Waka, I mean, that's a pretty good first four. And so why couldn't this team win 8 out of 10 and get back into, let's say, one game out or whatever, especially if you're playing the Cubs?
Let me ask you this. My tinfoil hat that I like to bring out when I talk Cardinals, and especially when I talk long-term Cardinals, is this. I think, as buddy-buddy as Matheny is with Gersh and with Mozeliak, and as much as he's kind of in the inner circle, do you think that not hamstringing Matheny down the stretch is just removing another excuse for this offseason if they want to make a move? If they wanted to make a managerial move in this offseason, but they had sold at the deadline, do you think Matheny and the people who support him could say, yeah, but you traded off all my assets. What was I supposed to do down the stretch?
Right, right.
You're making me play with a bunch of AAA guys and pitchers that you know, can't find a strike zone if I painted it out for them. So do you think that in a way you keep the expiring contracts, you have confidence in your minor leagues if the people do leave or you're just getting your compensatory picks back, you know, do you think that this is, okay, Mike, this is your chance. We're not going to sell out from under you, but we're giving you enough rope for the rest of the season. Let's see what happens.
You got one third of the season left, and you got to go prove to us that you can do something with it. Because there are a lot of people calling for all three of the young outfielders to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love Tommy Pham. I think he's a great player. I think that he's going to be a piece to be around for a while. Now, Hayward has been less than spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about selling, they could have just sold and said, you know, we'll get, if we can find a taker for Hayward, if we can find a taker for Lance Lynn, then we're done, we're out, we realize it. And had they been 8 games out, I think they would have really done that.
Sure.
But because they're only 4.5 out and things are within striking distance, they said, okay, we'll just stay with it. And to your point, maybe this is Matheny's last 50 games, and then they're saying, you get us in or you're done. And maybe that was the directive. We don't know, but
right,
we could find out quickly in early October if they don't make it, a quick, swift managerial change.
Yep. And my point I always come to out of that is, They rearranged the deck chairs on the Titanic a couple times this year. They moved coaches around. They brought people from all over the organization.
They did everything but get rid of him.
They also didn't bring Jose Oquindo back in the picture.
Right.
Jose Oquindo has been insulated down in Jupiter, Florida, waiting at the spring training home, not part of this regime at all. So if they are going to clean house, I think the number one name on that list to replace Matheny would be Jose Oquindo, because he has no association whatsoever with this regime, and he can come in as a completely fresh blank slate to this team and to this organization.
And the players who were there with Jose, like Molina, Yachty loves them.
Yes.
And so that does make sense. And there are a lot of people and a lot of fans growing tired of Matheny's ways.
Very much so. 442-8255, 800-229-5378. Bo Bayman sitting in with me today. First half of the show, the first hour, he's going to be here. We also getting ready for this Royals series. Royals made some moves, picked up Cahill, Mauer, Buchter, put them in the rotation and in the bullpen, went and got the milkman. Milky Cabrera comes back to the Royals with a heartfelt return. These guys were all rookies and second-year guys the last time Milky came through this organization. And so with all their success in the meantime, they are super excited to have him back. And then promptly went ahead and lost 4 out of 6, including a sweep at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles, which I just can't abide by, because I just can't abide by Jason LaCanfora. That guy, Baltimore journalist who just has some sort of beef with the Royals all over the place, cannot get over the Royals and everything that they stand for. And I just can't stand losing the Orioles, because I don't want that guy to have any glee or joy in his life whatsoever.
And as hot as the Royals were, they have certainly cooled off, and the offense has gone away. Again, shut out last night, 6-0. It was 3-0 forever, and then they, Baltimore got 3, I think, in the 8th. But that team, they went the opposite way. They said, we're all in.
Yep.
We're going to make these moves, and we're going to make a run. Again, they're within striking distance, too. I think at the trade deadline, I think that day they were within 2 or 2.5.
Yep.
And said a couple pieces here or there, and we're going to go for the Indians, and we're going to go for it. Plus, they got the wild card that they could get to. And yes, I realize that everybody talks about the Astros, and boy, the Astros, look at the Astros. And still, when you get them in a series, you only got to win 4 out of 7.
Yep.
And the Royals will have a little swagger if they would eventually meet the Astros, just because of past history.
Yeah, and I think at the point of that Red Sox series ending on Sunday, the Royals were like 15-14 versus the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Indians, and the Astros on the season. So they have an above 500 record against those teams on the season. So, it's definitely possible. The Mariners come to town. This is a huge series for wild card implications. Mariners just on the outside looking in, Royals just on the inside at the moment looking out. And it's 4 games at the K in front of the fountains. Gerard Dyson making his return to the K, first time since the trade to the Mariners. So it'll be great to see Mr. Zumbaya coming back. That's what speed do. And he will get a rousing, warm applause from the K faithful for everything he did for those 14 and 15 teams.
Absolutely. And the thing that the Royals have to do against the Mariners is they got to find the offense. They got to go. They got to go against and go after Yovani Gallardo tonight, who's really over the hill and past his prime. So go get him in the first 3-4 innings and take care of business, because that's the way that you're going to get yourself to relax, get yourself to have fun again, and it makes you quickly forget losing 3 in Baltimore. Just go out and score and put a crooked number up there, and things will fall into place. You just don't want to start pressing, because then you know what can happen. All of a sudden, you're squeezing the bat a little tighter, and you're putting up goose eggs all every inning.
Yep, that is definitely the way that works, and it's so funny. We started this break, this segment, talking about youth baseball, from youth baseball all the way to the pros. You start thinking about what you're doing, you start pressing a little bit, you start gripping things a little tighter, you start pitching, you start throwing, pitching instead of throwing. All of those things, when you get a little tight, and everything goes out the window, and it's true on all levels. So
no question.
Yeah, exactly. So Royals, get out there, relax, have fun in front of the home faithful, and we'll step aside for just a second, come right back. We're going to invite Dave Matter into the show here at the end of the first hour. We'll do one more break before then, but Dave Matter from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch will join us, and in the second hour, we'll have Jay Binkley from 610 in Kansas City talking Kansas City Chiefs training camp football tonight. We'll come back and talk a little more about that in just a second. Football, football, football. 442-8255-800-229-5378. You can get a hold of us here in the studio. American NFL tackle football back in action tonight. The Hall of Fame game. Canton, Ohio, the Cardinals, and the Cowboys. It's got to be better than last year. The Hall of Fame game canceled due to an unsafe field. They used the wrong paint on the former Superdome turf that was out. And
yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be Colts and Packers, I think.
Uh-huh. It was bad news. But so it was one of those deals where, you know, everybody took a little egg on their face and kind of stood up and said, "Well," and moved on.
Yeah.
And they took it on the chin on Twitter for about, 7 hours, and then everybody just kind of moved on, and it was just, you knew it was going to pop back up this year as people talked about it. But chance to see the Dallas Cowboys and the Arizona Cardinals, and hopefully nobody gets hurt. So game starts at 7 o'clock here, and it'll be on NBC, streaming online, NBCSports.com. So if you are ready for some football, I think that's how the saying goes, you're in luck. We're back.
I think I saw something, Jay, that was last Sunday was the last Sunday without football until February.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, between preseason games and then, that Labor Day where the NFL isn't quite starting, but college football plays on that all weekend. They play on Sunday. They play on Monday. So football is back, no doubt about it, which is funny only because I think it's because it's been so hot around here.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that we're already going to be able to watch a game, albeit preseason, tonight.
Right. This is not a Madden tournament. This is not
this is not a drill.
This is not the CFL. If you've been flipping around your ESPN channels lately over the last 3-4 weeks, you've noticed a lot of CFL coverage. That 55-yard line looks a little alien to me, but, you can kind of handle it, those deep end zones. But CFL has been on the – but this is – the Arizona Cardinals and the Dallas Cowboys, America's team.
And the Cowboys, I was going to say, the Cowboys should be one of the better teams in the NFC if they don't regress and if Ezekiel Elliott can stay out of trouble. But they should be one of the better teams in the NFC. I mean, when you think of them, you think of maybe Seattle.
I think you look at maybe the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah,
I mean,
they could bounce back. I think Carolina could bounce back. I think Green Bay is always there. So.
Yep.
Between those 3, 4, 5 teams, that's probably the elite in the NFC.
We will get back into more of our coverage. George and I's favorite NFL season segment we do, small sample size theater. We like to do small sample size where we take only, and this is only, that week's results and talk about the best and the worst in the NFL based only and solely on that week's results. It's an interesting way to break your brain out of thinking about who's really good and who's really bad from a big picture and just really talk about the week at hand. So that's something that will make its return this year. Lots of Mizzou Tigers floating around. You will hear a lot probably during this preseason about Coney Ealy with the Patriots. That trade was made, and then the man he was supposed to be sitting behind and playing behind on the 2-deep chart went and retired. Ninkovich went and retired.
Yeah.
So Coney Ealy will have more of a starring role for the Super Bowl champion Patriots. Plenty of guys out there, too, seeing time. Jeremy Maclin making headlines with his kind of unexpected release from the Chiefs, re-signing with the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens will get going next Thursday, a week from today, against the Redskins, Patriots, Jags, Bears, Broncos, Georges, Dolphins, against those Super Bowl losing Falcons. The moral there, don't ever be up 25 points because it's just bad.
Dolphins? George likes the Dolphins?
George is a Dolphins fan.
Did you see the video of Ryan Tannehill going down in practice? Man.
Yes, Ryan Tannehill today, if you have him on your fantasy team, if you've done your fantasy draft, or if you're in a keeper league, Tannehill goes down in a non-contact manner today during he's scrambling, running to the far sideline, goes down a knee injury. It has been scoped. They're saying no ligament damage. They're saying no issues, that it was not as severe as it seems. But you never quite know. You might want to give that 24 hours if you don't have your draft coming up and you were looking at eyeballing Ryan Tannehill for one of your slots in the draft. Keep an eye on that because no idea how that actually ends up. But the Dolphins with a big question all of a sudden. And when you think about these preseason games, it's sad. But that's what you think about.
Absolutely.
You think about who's going to get injured, who's not going to get injured. How little,
and who's
going to
play and who's not going to play. Yeah.
How little can we have our starters on the field? So these things are kind of whatever. Chiefs and 49ers. In the second hour, I will have two tickets to give away to the Chiefs and the 49ers. It's the 8 o'clock game. It's a nighttime game next Friday, August 11th. I have two tickets to give away for the Chiefs and the 49ers, and I will do that next hour. I will announce it again as we get out of here to wrap up hour one. But the powers that be, the suits and the mustaches, they slipped it under the door. I moved the file cabinet just for a second. I thought they were trying to trick me into breaking in. I keep the file cabinet in front of the door so they can't come and get me during the broadcast. But they slipped it under there. Two tickets to Chiefs and Niners, a chance to go get into Arrowhead on our dime. Bo, what about you? Where do you have any random geographic fanhoods that you follow?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Wisconsin. So
okay.
I am a cheesehead.
Okay. All
through
right.
And through. So yes, I'm a Packers fan. Big
okay.
time.
Okay. Then does that put you in a Brewers situation, a Twins?
It does. No,
okay.
I'm Brewers. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
As I have said many times on these airwaves, I am a Brewers fan. And by the way, the Brewers just beat the Cardinals 2-1.
Ooh, random that I would bring that up right as that goes final. But there it is. The Brew Crew taking out the Cardinals for afternoon baseball, finishing up that set, losing the series. The 5-4 win yesterday, the 2-1 loss today, and a 2-3 loss on Tuesday.
Yeah, so, big offense in that series.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Yeah. So the Cardinals will pack up their gear, head off to
Cincinnati.
Cincinnapolis.
Yeah.
And then they'll go try to take on those cellar dwelling Reds and see what's going on. We are going to step aside for 1 second as the Cardinals pack up with their tail between their legs. Our tail's not between our legs, our head's held high. And we're going to get a hold of Dave Matter. We're going to get him on the phone. And when we come back, we will have some of Dave Matter's takes on Mizzou's practice, the basketball team, some random basketball commitments, and everything else going on over there with the black and gold. We're going to step aside for 1 second. We'll be right back. Dave Matter.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Thursday afternoon, Mizzou fall camp. The football players over there getting their reps in and getting going. And we would be remiss if we did not talk to Mr. Dave Matter from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Dave, how have you been doing over there first week of fall camp?
Doing pretty well. Weather's been tolerable. Two practices have been open to the media, and they'll have a couple more this weekend, I should say Saturday. Tomorrow is closed, but yeah, so far so good.
And as you, not really any crazy big news, nothing that really shocked anyone too much, except the 2017 class of recruits is bereft of wide receivers. Just kind of a random happenstance, but is that something of concern, or just it just so happened that the dice rolled and the guys who didn't make it this year and didn't qualify just both happened to kind of be in the same position group?
Yeah, for one, I think it's why you're seeing Missouri really load up on receivers in their 2018 class. I mean, they really have to get the depth just get the numbers up for next year. You can't really do a whole lot about it right now. Yeah, they lost O'Shea Clark, whose time as a Missouri wide receiver didn't even get to one practice. He was suspended, and then Barry Odom announced today that he's going to be transferring. So he was a guy that they took flyer on the day before signing day. Didn't really have any other big school offers, but they liked what they saw. They needed a receiver. They had lost two during the recruiting process that committed to Notre Dame and Ohio State. So, you know, they didn't invest a whole lot of time recruiting him, but I think they were at least counting on him to maybe be a factor. And then Deron Davis, who didn't qualify academically, that really wasn't a big surprise. That was kind of the risk, you know, for the last year or so. They did think that he would be able, from what I understand, he only had to pass one class this summer that didn't work out. But they think they can get him in January and maybe get him into the program for next year instead of having to go to junior college. So not a great situation. They really can't afford many injuries at receiver, but they are too deep at every position with scholarship guys that they like. And they really like the three starters. So I think they're okay for now.
Dave, it's Bo. How are you, my friend?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Hopefully you kissed the three boys and Molly goodbye when the camp started as you hang out over there. Anything that has surprised you? I know it's so early. I don't necessarily want an in-depth answer on, oh, the defense is going to do this or the offense is going to do this.
Right.
Anything just surprised you with your eyes in the first couple times you've been able to watch them?
No, you know, they're so different offensively than they were a year ago. I mean, it's the same guys, but like a year ago, they're still, you know, kind of learning their steps and just trying to figure out Heupel's offense. And there was more urgency this time of year just to learn things. And they had to figure out who was going to play. And now it's like, this is suddenly a veteran group. They talk like veterans. They need to see more out of everybody. I mean, nobody was a finished product by any means, but it's not overnight, obviously. It's been a year, but
right.
You know, there was so much concern a year ago about this team, who was going to play on the offensive line, you know, who was going to catch passes. We knew Drew Locke was going to be the quarterback, but who was going to run the ball? And, you know, they really, really like the main pieces that they have at receiver, at tight end, and at running back, and they've got depth at all three of those spots. So, and again, you know, that's not a surprise, but I think to see it just change so much from a year ago, it's a real positive thing for this team.
Well, they've returned so many of those guys on the offensive side of the ball that, you know, and a lot of those guys are only juniors. I mean, it's crazy how young they were last year. One of Drew Locke's stated intentions when he was in high school being recruited and everything else was between him and his dad was to talk about leaving early, was talk about getting into the draft, to be another piece in the kind of the Mizzou quarterback pipeline. Does he have that leap in him? I mean, from what you've seen, from what you know, Heupel and coaching and things say, does he have that leap in him to put together a year this year that could get him to be the next part of that pipeline in the next offseason?
Well, I think he's got the talent. I think he's got the supporting cast to help that talent come out. You know, but he really has to get it done, though. He's got to be better than a, you know, a 56% passer. Which he was around that mark last year. He's got to be more efficient. He's got to, you know, he didn't have a lot of trouble with interceptions last year, though. I think the defense dropped a few and helped him out in that way. He's got to be much better against the best defenses on their schedule. You know, last year when they went up against, you know, it was like NFL minor league secondaries when they played LSU in Florida, he was really bad. I mean, the whole offense was. It wasn't just on him, but he was not same player that he was later in the year against Vanderbilt and Arkansas in those games they won, or even Tennessee, the game where they put up 700 yards of offense. So he can't have performances like that if he wants to think about leaving early for the NFL. And to his credit, I don't think that's really on his mind right now. But he has the talent to do it. He's in a system that's going to be quarterback-friendly. You know, I think in today's game, you don't have to win a national championship or a conference championship or win a bunch of games to be a quarterback who leaves early. That used to be kind of the stigma. Look at Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech last year. I mean, they barely won enough games to go to a bowl game, and he was a top 10 pick, all based on talent and his production. So Drew Locke, if he has a great junior year, if he gets those percentages up, you know, and he does it against the best teams on their schedule, regardless if they win the game or not, then I think he'll have a fair chance.
Hey, Dave, let me ask you this question, and maybe I'm wearing my glasses that are Mizzou colored only because I live in Columbia. I know they had a rough year last year, but with the guys that they return, I'm just surprised that they're getting no love whatsoever. I mean, some people are predicting them 0-8 in the SEC. That seems to me, I'm not saying they're winning the national championship, but,
right.
But I mean, they're getting no love whatsoever.
You know, I think some of that is people who don't really look closely and are sort of validating their own preconceived ideas about Missouri being a bad fit for this league.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you go down to SEC Media Day, and I think the beat writers who cover the teams in the East who have covered Missouri games for the last 5 years, I think they're pretty familiar with the program. And you talk to some of them, and, you know, I would split a cab with a writer who covers Florida, and he was like, man, I think they're going to be, you know, 7-5. This guy voted Drew Locke first team all SEC. I'm impressed. But then you talk to maybe some others that cover the West, or they're not as exposed to Missouri. They're the 0-8 crowd because they just kind of look at the record. They're not as familiar with the talent, maybe not as familiar with Odom. And not that he's got this sterling resume at this point. But I think it's a lot easier to dismiss 2013, 2014 if you choose to just kind of look at last year. I kind of almost write off 2015 because that was such a weird year. There's so many other things going on with that team. Last year was more about football and coaching and a rookie head coach and or just a bad defense. I think they play average defense this year, and that offense goes, you know, everybody improves to the point where they're consistently really good instead of just kind of good. And I think they'll get to a bowl game and be much better than a lot of people think.
Dave, Coach Barry Odom had a really great run, recruiting run, sandwiched around Night at the Zoo, really made some good landings, some four-star guys, and really kind of put together some momentum and some inertia for this 2018 class, which at the point in time before that Friday started was really lacking for that Tiger team. But on the basketball side of things, Coach Martin comes in and has this great 2017 class, and then 2018 class is a little muddled. Pickett kind of is there, and then over this week, KJ Santos pops up kind of out of nowhere, played on the Puerto Rican national, you know, juniors team, and was kind of all over the place, but picks a landing spot, and it's Mizzou. You know, take on that 2018 class as it kind of relates to Jonte reclassifying, and we'll get you out of here on this one.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm not really sure what the strategy is there. You know, they may be taking these commitments now, seeing how recruiting goes with some other options, and then seeing how these guys develop, whether it's Pickett at prep school or Santos in junior college. And they can always, you know, come back and say, hey, we're going to go in a different direction here. That's not the best PR move to go with sometimes, but that's sometimes reality. Or, you know, I've heard that there's a thought among the staff that Santos could really blow up at junior college as far as his numbers go and score a lot of points, and then all of a sudden he's a much more attractive guy that will have better offers, and it'll look like, hey, that Missouri got in on this guy early. He could maybe help them. So this is it's kind of a different kind of recruiting class, because last year there was so much hype and hoopla around not just Porter Jr., but really everybody in that class. And also, too, you got to think about maybe they're expecting a little bit more roster turnover with some returning players that, you know, maybe not stick around for the long haul. I mean, we all expect Porter to be in the draft next year. And then we know Barnett's a senior and Cassius Robertson's a senior, but maybe they're expected to have a couple more options than it looks like right now on paper. So yeah, that was a little bit puzzling. But in college basketball these days, you are rebuilding every year. I mean, there's so many transfers. You count on freshmen more and more that it's kind of hard to really know what to expect year to year on what your roster is going to look like.
Very much so. And keeping up with all of it, Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Dave, thanks for taking time out on a Thursday. We'll be talking to you more
Dave.
Go through. Yeah.
Okay.
See you on the sidelines.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you soon. We're going to step aside, come back, and wrap up hour number one of The Closers. According to our music database, this is energetic, funky, sassy, sexy, and classy. That's schizo. That's a lot of things going on.
That's George Young.
That is George Young. I'm gonna send him an email. Send our music database an email. Energetic, funky, sassy, sexy, and classy. Woo, VIPs only. Just saying. Goodness sakes. All right. Well, good first hour here on a Thursday. Bo Bayman, thanks for sitting in with me, man. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Jay. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome anytime. You can come bump me out of the chair if you need to. So
I don't need to do that.
You are welcome anytime. Definitely appreciate it. I'm on Twitter, you know, and I'm always checking it during the show, making sure in case breaking news happens or something, you know. But I did catch a top five albums of your lifetime. We don't really have time for all top five, but is there an album from back in the day that you treasure? Like if you were on the deserted island, the one you'd want with you?
That's a good question. It may have to be Back in Black by AC/DC.
Oh, man. You know, I'm just young enough that I wasn't really around for like buying albums when AC/DC was hot, and I really miss it. I think I would have been a huge AC/DC fan.
Yeah, they're so good. Yeah. They are so good and still going strong, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can see them sometimes at county fairs now, but you can see them.
Right. I had a weird one. I went through a phase, and it was definitely an album from a phase, but a band called Sunny Day Real Estate in the mid-90s, and they had an album called Diary. They're on the Sub Pop record out of Seattle, and that album haunts me. It's never far from my fingertips or my brain, and it's so different and so out there. It's always been part of my
thing. It's your go-to.
So it's one of my go-tos. It's a little known band. And I actually had people later, I work in the bar industry here in town, and some of my younger people, I'd mentioned that I like Sunny Day Real Estate, and they'd be like, oh yeah, only the really like hip cool kids listen to Sunny Day Real Estate. And I'm like, what? There were like three people in my high school of like 4,000 people that listened to Sunny Day Real Estate. It wasn't even the cool kids. It was just the only people that heard of them. So yeah, it was pretty crazy. But I love talking a little music, especially on Twitter. I really enjoy getting people's, you know, their feedback on that. At Sparks J, SparksJay. Feel free, if you're out there listening to The Closers, to contact me out there. Bo joining me. Thank you again so much.
You got it, Jay.
And we're going to get you out of here and wrap up hour number one. Hour number two, Jay Binkley from 610 up in the day shift up in Kansas City. He's going to join us to talk Kansas City Chiefs football. And I will have two Kansas City Chiefs preseason tickets to give away against the 49ers next Friday. Giving that away next hour. So be ready. Fingers poised. 442-8255. That'll be next hour. We're coming right back.
News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.